Let's just say it wouldn't be the first time a member of the royal family was secreted away in the tower until they were no longer believed to hold any value. With that family, everything has precedent. Once upon a time, in early modern England, a king was born. Styled Charles I, he ascended to the throne in 1625 following the death of his father, and first king of England and Scotland simultaneously, King James I. Charles's reign began during a time of considerable tension within the kingdom, marked by religious strife, financial challenges, and disputes between the monarchy and Parliament. Early on in his reign, Charles faced significant financial troubles, exacerbated by his extravagant spending and costly foreign policies. To address these issues, he repeatedly clashed with Parliament over taxation and fiscal policy, asking for more, more, more money, often for his wardrobe. Parliament, particularly the House of Commons, resisted the king's attempts to raise revenue without their consent, viewing it as an infringement on their rights and liberties. One of the most contentious issues during Charles's early reign was religion. Influenced by his wife, Henrietta Maria, a devout Catholic, he pursued policies that favored the Anglican Church and sought to impose religious conformity. This alienated many Protestants within England who feared a harsh and potentially deadly return to official Catholicism, which had of course been abolished by King Henry VIII. It was in 1629 when tensions between the king and Parliament reached a breaking point, leading to a period known as the 11 Years' Tyranny, or the Personal Rule. During this time, Charles dissolved Parliament and ruled without it from 1629 to 1640, relying on alternative means of raising revenue, such as forced loans and many fines. On top of spending, Charles tried to implement his new religious policies in Scotland. This led to the outbreak of the Bishops' Wars in 1639 and 1640, the conflicts further straining the relationship of the king and his subjects. In addition to domestic challenges, Charles's foreign policy faced setbacks, particularly in his conflicts with Spain and France. His marriage alliance with France drew criticism from Protestant factions, and of course further contributed to his unpopularity. Discontent was widespread by the late 1630s and early 1640s, and opposition to these policies grew stronger. By 1640, the king had no choice but to reconvene Parliament. Ultimately, of course, it was too little too late, and two distinct groups formed in opposition in the Parliament: Royalists and Parliamentarians. Unable to discuss matters in a gentlemanly way, these two groups began the English Civil War in 1642. For 9 years, this brutal and tumultuous conflict tore apart the fabric of English society, pitting royalists loyal to the king against parliamentarians who were seeking to limit the king's power. While there were certainly noble ideals and principles at play, perhaps on both sides, the war also brought out some of the darkest elements of human nature, including cruelty, violence, and betrayal. One of the darkest aspects of this time was the devastation it wrought upon ordinary people. Civilian populations often found themselves caught in the crossfire, facing pillaging, plundering, and atrocities committed by both sides. Marauding armies, hungry for supplies and seeking revenge, descended upon towns and villages, leaving behind a trail of destruction and despair. Sieges were a common feature of the war, with besieged towns enduring unimaginable suffering as food supplies dwindled, disease spread, and living conditions deteriorated. The siege of cities like Bristol and York saw intense fighting and widespread suffering among the civilians. The brutality of the conflict was not limited to the battlefield. Both sides engaged in acts of violence and reprisal against perceived enemies. Royalist cavalry units, known as cavaliers, and parliamentarian soldiers, known as roundheads, committed atrocities against prisoners of war and civilians alike. Massacres, executions, and mutilations were tragically common occurrences. Religious fervor also played a significant role in exacerbating the brutality of war. This conflict was not just a struggle for political power, but also a religious struggle between Protestant factions. Puritan zealots within the parliamentarian ranks viewed the war as a holy crusade against the perceived tyranny and Catholic sympathies of King Charles I. This religious fervor often fueled acts of cruelty and intolerance towards those of different religious beliefs. In 1646, the king was imprisoned by one Oliver Cromwell, leader of the parliamentarians, and put under house arrest in the old Tudor royal apartments at Hampton Court Palace. He famously escaped dressed as a servant, but with nowhere to turn, he found himself in the company of the Scots, who did turn him in once again. Under arrest once more, but handled with care until 1649, the king refused to repent, to change his mind, to sign any documents, and of course, he refused to abdicate and give his power to Parliament. Cromwell's parliamentarians saw no other choice but regicide. The cold chill of January gripped the air as a somber procession made its way through the streets of London. King Charles I, once the embodiment of regal dignity and authority, now walked with a heavy heart, his steps faltering as he approached the scaffold erected outside the banqueting house in Whitehall. The eerie silence was broken only by the muffled sounds of the crowd. A throng of onlookers gathered to witness the unthinkable, the beheading of their king. As he ascended the scaffold, he cast a final, mournful glance at the world he'd known, his eyes betraying a mixture of defiance and resignation. He wore a somber black cloak, the fabric billowing in the wintry breeze like the shroud of a condemned man. His once proud countenance was now marked by the weight of impending doom, the lines of sorrow etched deep into his pale face. A solemn hush fell over the crowd as the executioner stepped forward, his hands trembling slightly as he brandished the gleaming blade of the axe. The king's gaze never wavered as he knelt before the block, his head bowed in silent prayer, one supposes. The air was thick with anticipation, every breath a collective gasp of disbelief at the unthinkable act about to unfold. And then, with a swift and merciless stroke, the executioner brought the axe down upon the block, the sound of metal meeting wood echoing like thunder through the stillness of the morning. A collective cry of horror rose from the crowd as the king's severed head rolled from its perch, crimson blood spilling forth in a macabre torrent. Time stood still for the onlookers as the grotesque tableau played out before them. And then, chaos. They surged forward, cries of outrage drowned out by the clamor of the soldiers' weapons and the anguished wails of the king's loyal subjects. In the aftermath of the beheading, an eerie silence settled over Whitehall, broken only by the mournful tolling of church bells in the distance. The king done away with, a new chapter dawned with the ascension of Oliver Cromwell as Lord Protector of the Commonwealth of England, Scotland, and Ireland. Cromwell, a man of iron will and unyielding determination, stepped into the void left by the demise of the monarchy, his will enforced by the new model army. Cromwell's vision of a godly nation, governed by principles of righteousness and divine providence, drove his relentless pursuit of power and authority. His fervent belief in his own righteousness led him to justify his actions as the will of God, a mandate to impose his vision of moral rectitude upon a nation torn asunder by civil strife. Yet, for all his piety, Cromwell's rule was haunted by the specter of tyranny, which, of course, he had sought to overthrow. The once revolutionary ideals of liberty and equality gave way to the harsh realities of oppression and repression as Cromwell's grip on power tightened with every year. In 1658, the iron-fisted Protector breathed his last, his mortal frame succumbing to the ravages of illness and age. His death on September 3rd was likely due to a form of malaria. Of course, the death left a significant power vacuum, contributing once again to political instability in the Commonwealth, and ultimately paving the way for the restoration of the monarchy under Charles II in 1660, a man who loved fancy dress and parties even more than his father. Now, for his faults, the Lord Protector was beloved by many, and following his death, his body was buried with great ceremony in Westminster Abbey. However, after the restoration of the monarchy, Cromwell's remains were exhumed and his body was subjected to posthumous punishment as traitor to the crown. His corpse was hung in chains at Tyburn, a common execution site in London, as a warning to others who would challenge royal authority. The fate of Cromwell's head is somewhat less clear. According to historical accounts, Cromwell's severed head was placed upon a spike atop Westminster Hall, where it remained as a gruesome spectacle for several decades. It was reportedly taken down during a storm in 1685 and disappeared from public view. For centuries, the whereabouts of this head remained a mystery, until the discovery in the 19th century that shed some light on this fate. It was in 1815, during the construction work at Sidney Sussex College, Cambridge, where workers unearthed a head believed to be Cromwell's. Subsequent analysis and historical research suggested that this was indeed the head of the former Lord Protector. The head was reburied, eventually, at the chapel at the location where it had been found. This was in 1960. His body, of course, could never be recovered. Thanks for listening.